That's recording, and here we go on intro. Put your headphones on.
Good evening, friends of the Bulkley Valley and beyond. My name is Thomas Tom Roper, and you are listening to CICK, Smithers Community Radio, 93.9 on your FM dial. My program, On the Ropes, is broadcasting from the Cassia territory of the Gidimdum clan, home of the Wet'suwet'en.
Good evening, folks. That was our taped introduction. And tonight, I'm very happy to bring on one of my friends and columnist, Sonia Lester. Sonia, welcome to the program.
Well, thank you, Tom, and thanks for having me. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm very excited about us sort of trying to figure a little more about our lives in the Bulkley Valley. We're always trying to understand why people would come to this beautiful valley and why and how they stay. And so if I was to ask you that, Sonia, like going way back, were you actually born in the valley?
No. But you're right when you said about the beautiful valley being the draw. I was born in Vancouver, and I was raised in Richmond.
Mm.
And then Richard and I had our three children, and we lived in Delta. And Richard was a foreman for the longshoreman. And,
oh, yeah.
Hated the traffic, hated the city, and we'd come up here to visit some friends,
mm-hmm.
and fell in love with the valley. And then we, after the second trip up, Richard, that's all he talked about,
right.
was moving north.
Right, exactly.
And, yeah, so I had said, well, you better move me now or you won't get me out of here.
right, exactly.
Three children.
Well, that's interesting, Sonia, yeah. because I was actually born in Brig House. Which is before Richmond became Richmond type of thing.
Yeah.
And I lived on Lulu Island.
So did I.
Yeah, and so it's kind of interesting that we're from the same area.
Yeah.
But so when you came up to the valley, Sonia, I felt like when I came, we were in a similar time period, and my sort of focus was on going back to the land. I had that connection that I wanted to build a house. And I wanted to sort of, there was a movement going on. Did you feel any part of that?
Nothing like that. For us, it was, my mom had a farm in Vanderhoof.
Hmm.
And we shopped between Vanderhoof and Hazleton looking for a piece of property. So what we did, when he got the itch, we sold our house, which sold fast. We listed it and it was pretty well gone within a week.
Mm-hmm.
And then we bought a moving van. And we packed, had a garage sale. We packed everything that would fit into this moving van and headed up north and then started shopping for property and landed in Driftwood.
No kidding.
Yeah.
No kidding.
Yeah. And no job or anything.
Right.
Yet. Yeah.
Right. But you, so you actually made the, came over the hill, the Hungry Hill, looked down on the valley. Do you recall that?
Not so much because I didn't really realize that it was going to be my home because we spent a month or two looking.
Right,
and,
right.
Yeah. And then when you came back to the land, the property that we did get didn't have electricity or telephone.
Oh, I see.
Yeah. So and then we put it on, the next year. We lived for 1 year at least. Without electricity or running water.
In the same property that you're in right now?
Yep.
Right, yeah. Okay. And then did you build a house?
No, we moved in.
There was a house.
There was a house.
Right.
Richard did an awful lot of renovation and added three bedrooms extra onto it.
Right, right.
Yeah.
So everybody had some space.
Some space, yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. And that decision to go into the Driftwood Valley, that's a very beautiful place.
We did not know what we were getting
right,
as
right.
the treasure. It was like a pearl at our feet, and we didn't know it. It was a house we could pay for cash almost.
Yeah, exactly. That was sort
back
of
then,
a, yeah,
yeah.
To try to keep ourselves out of
debt. When did
you
get here?
I came actually to Fraser Lake in 73.
Oh, okay.
And then I came up to Smithers area in 75.
Same here.
So it's just, yeah. You know, it's 50 years now we've made it.
Yeah, we have. I know.
It's so hard to believe it. Exactly.
Yeah.
So then when we talk about Richard and his love, like this love is sort of, it's the bush. It's getting out and having your own freedom. Like the thing that really attracted me was Crown Land, being able to go places.
Yeah.
Like, you know, when you're in the city, every piece of land is kind of owned.
Right.
And so wherever you want to go, you're on somebody's property.
Yeah.
We're here. It seems to me we have a little bit of freedom.
Oh, we do. And we did. Mind you, when we lived at the coast with our group of friends, we canoed. Every weekend.
Oh, okay.
All from Easter to Thanksgiving.
Right.
And then from Thanksgiving to Easter, we partied. We went to,
right.
We played Remoli or,
right.
We,
Yeah. No, that's great. That's great. Well, as we go along with the show, Sonia, we try to mix in some songs.
Okay.
And the songs are sort of, they can be your favorite songs, or they can just be songs that you happen to like today, or... I did have a couple of songs with Pat Scott that were her marriage songs, and they were very emotional to her.
Yeah.
So they were. It was kind of cool to play them, you know.
Yeah.
So I've got when you and I talked a little bit, we kind of decided that we would try and start off with Mountain Girl.
Crooked Log Cabin.
Okay,
that's the
that
one that brought
great.
Us north. Well, that Jenny wrote that this song, Crooked Log Cabin, about the journey north.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, that's perfect then.
Yeah.
That'll get us started here. So let's see if we can get that coming on. That is, it says The Hungry Hill Ride.
Everybody's mortal, it's the way life goes. Just the man and his wife, for the children moved on. Come hell or high water, their love will stay strong. And who will live longer, nobody can say, but the crooked log cabin on their dying day. Small, so quaint, but what a fine
That was beautiful, wasn't it? You know, I get a real kick out of the fact that Jenny is so connected in the music world, and to write that song is sort of, that's your whole life right there, laid out of what happened. That's pretty amazing.
That is pretty amazing. And do you want to go into that part of?
Well, we can open up any area that you like and close any area that you like. I just wanted to.
Your agenda.
Yeah, well, it's a little rough agenda. But when I came up here, for some reason, I had got over to the Driftwood Hall, and I got a chance to introduce your band, the Driftwood Canyon Band, and Jenny would have been 9 or 10 years old at the time, and it was always just a sellout crowd. Everybody's very happy to hear you guys sing.
You.
How did that go? How did you decide to go into music? Did you start that in Richmond?
No, none of us played anything. Larry took a little bit of classical guitar from Charlie Van Gorkum.
Oh, okay.
And then the Driftwood WI hosted a Dogwood Bluegrass Festival, which Jack Trowbridge and Doug Klinkenberg put on.
Okay.
And I called, and I was part of the WI, and I called Richard and said, can you please bring us? And he walked in the door, and he heard the band and the mandolin.
Wow.
And he knew Doug and Jack. So then the next thing you know, Doug was teaching us in our living room.
Wow.
And we had to go out and buy
equipment,
our instrument.
Right.
Yeah. We should have built a house.
Right. Yeah, exactly. So you had, and the children wanted to be part of it?
It just happened that way. Yeah, I guess Larry had the guitar. And then it started with Larry and Richard. And,
right.
And just a quick little story is we'd gone to visit my mom in Vanderhoof at Christmas time, and Richard and Larry were playing her some tunes.
Right.
And Richie, he was maybe 10. Jenny was 8 at the time.
Right.
Anyhow, he was playing the penny whistle, and he was a little bit nose out of joint, and so we got him the mandolin, and we came back at Easter. So it's how many months?
Right.
He showed Grandpa. We played Jesse McReynolds' Home Sweet Home.
Right.
And he played the mandolin.
Wow.
Cross-picking it.
Right.
He had the most uncanny natural talent.
That is incredible. That really is incredible. So, and what about Jenny? How did she fit into that program?
While we were playing, she built a fiddle out of a box and some elastics.
Right.
And then we were down at the Coombs Bluegrass Festival, and we were playing as a family band. It was so crazy how fast everything happened.
Right.
And so a friend called me and said, there's a fiddle in a pawn shop, $69. And I said, oh, get it.
Buy it. Right,
so
exactly.
She sat on the lawn in the rodeo grounds on the blanket, like we were all watching, and she rosined her bow all weekend.
Wow.
But that same weekend, we went up to a lake with some friends.
Right.
And I couldn't find her, and she was in the little travel trailer, and she said, listen, Mom, bartender blues. And she picked out Pizzicato on her fiddle.
Right.
The tune Bartender Blues.
At 8 years old.
And first weekend she had a fiddle.
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
She had the talent is there.
There's no question.
Just,
it was an opportunity presented itself.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, that music end of it was that kept you busy, like raising your children, and you're in the music scene of the valley, and along the way, you decide that you're going to start a business. Take a hike tours.
Oh, yeah.
What? Well, how could you ever fit that in?
Well, the other thing, too, is, you know, I was a full-time working mom oftentimes.
Right.
But at that point, I mustn't have been. Just loved to hike all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And a friend introduced me to another friend, Cheryl Teves. And we were so like-minded. And we just started doing it. Taking people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Going out
yeah.
with friends,
oh, so
hiking. And
yeah.
There's so many areas that are so beautiful.
Yeah.
It's really, like, did you actually get Einar Blix's book?
Oh, yeah.
Remember that?
Oh, yeah. My friend and I, about 1977, 78, we were already hiking every trail we could find.
Right, And what decided you to try and do it as a business,
I think just somebody suggested it, you know.
Yeah,
And we did. But what worked for us, we did kids camp out of McDonald Lake. And
right.
So we do teenagers and then preteens.
Right.
And take 2 weeks for each. So that was sort of the bread and butter of the take-a-hike
of the operation.
Yeah, and that was Cheryl's idea. She was a school teacher.
Right.
And she rocked at it.
Well, she must have loved that.
Yeah.
And I mean, to get kids outside, it's sort of the key to appreciation.
Yeah, and the kids were wonderful. They, at the end of the, we'd have a little campfire and we'd give a little prize survey tape or a bear bell or something for the one that wore her hat the most often.
That's pretty cute. That's pretty cool. So that business then, you kind of worked it, and then you decided you were going to sell it.
Yeah.
Was there a reason for you to step out of that business at that time?
Not really. I don't think so. Cheryl moved away.
Okay. Yeah. So that would make some kind of a change to it, whatever.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. And so then you had a chance to sell it to Tony Harris.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, at the same time that you had that doing that, myself and my family, we decided to start our own business called Get Lost Tours. Because every time we went out somewhere hiking or whatever, we always managed to find a way to get lost and work our way out. But we just did it as a fun thing.
So anyways, that was
pretty cool. So the other thing that's going on out in your area there, Sonia, the Driftwood Canyon, the Driftwood Road, you had some very good neighbors.
Oh, yeah.
Like the people out, you know, that's when Richard and Gail Jenny moved into the area.
Yeah, and that's right. And that is, like you were talking about, you know, how did I have time? And here's, you know, kind of what happened that I often reflect on is I was very busy being a working mom and a musical family, and Richard into his, sportsman's hobbies.
Right.
And me in the hiking. And I met like Gail Jenny and Wendy Perry, and I met a wonderful group of women, but I never had time
to
really, you know, enjoy them. And I was kind of on the peripheral, but they were always very kind, and at the beginning would invite me.
But
you can only take so many no's. I can't. I'm busy.
Well, that is part of, that's part of life where you're trying to, there is a balance.
Yeah.
And it's hard to always get it to fit properly along that way. But, and also, remember, who was the other person up the road there? It was
Lynn and Sheila. Lynn and Sheila.
Yeah.
Yeah, and they, you know, are pivotal in our community with the storytelling and the health and the compassion. And here's a little side story with Sheila. After Richard passed, he passed in September 11th, and I foolishly said that I would help for an election, not realizing how raw, because I was in deep grief.
Right.
How raw my feelings were, but she was a scrutineer, and she was knitting this beautiful blue shawl. Mm-hmm. But I said to her, "Oh, isn't that lovely?" And I said, "And who's that for?" And she said, "Oh, it's for, you know, a friend." She had been knitting it, crocheting it for me, and I didn't realize it. But I mean, there's been so much, you know, little things that happen in life that are all the joys.
Yes.
That,
that feed your life when it's needed.
They sure do.
You know, it's amazing.
Yeah.
And the passing of Richard, there's such a difficult period of time. I think about my sister passed away and my mother passed away, and I can't get them out of my life. You know what I mean? I've grieved, but I still think about them every day, and I don't think it's wrong. I need them in my life, you know?
Yeah.
So it's very complicated time, and I was gonna say, like, I had a friend in Australia, and her husband passed away. It was kind of a freak accident where he was going in for a knee operation.
Yeah.
And he ended up with a blood clot and passed away. Now, she's never recovered from that, and that's probably been 20 years. And so is there a period where you feel that recovery can happen?
Yeah, it has to happen. Mm-hmm. So Richard was September 11th. My mom passed on April the 4th, and my sister passed the next year in Belgium, and I went and was with her. But the self-care that you have to do.
Right.
I remember I was standing up in, after Richard passed, I was standing up in the art room, and the hardest is the mealtime.
Right,
you know?
Right.
So I thought, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to make, while supper's cooking, I'm going to make myself a little hors d'oeuvre tray, and I'm going to have a glass of wine.
Mm-hmm.
So I made that so that I could actually take the time that was the hardest and make it special.
Yes, I see.
Yeah. So then it became, a little routine.
Now, right.
I still often have a glass of wine, not two.
yeah, that's right. Yes, well, January is a no alcohol month.
Oh, is it?
But we do what we have to do.
Yeah,
to
get through.
Right. So, Sonia, talking about that, I just wanted to mix in the next song, if we can. And this one was Mountain Girl, and you had mentioned it had something to do with Gail Jenny.
Oh, no, Mountain Girl, that one is Jenny wrote.
Okay, your Jenny wrote.
My right. That's got to be confusing,
yeah. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, that's right. That's where I was thinking of your neighbors along.
Yeah,
what
do you want to put Gail Jenny's song in now?
Which one is that?
That's that Beauty...
Well, no, we can still carry along.
Like,
we should really discuss a little bit about Jenny's songwriting ability. Like that song, the previous song that we had, Crooked Log Cabin.
Yeah.
That was a really little.
Yeah. And what happened with Jenny is, and she did this on her own as well, but she decided, because we had two friends, one from Chetwynd and one from Burns Lake, that went down to Texas and went to Bluegrass College.
Mm.
So Jenny applied and went down for a two-year, degree.
Right.
A two-year degree.
Okay.
And so here's we are in a small pond, and we've learned in our living room. So
right.
I had no confidence in how we were in the world.
Right.
And two things that had happened is Richie went down with another band down to a workshop at Cannon Beach.
Right.
And
In Oregon.
And the Hot Rise Band was hosting it. And so wisely what the Hot Rise Band did is they, instead of you picking where you wanted to go, they had you audition. You played. And it shocked me because they put him in the advanced.
Right. Right.
And then Jenny, when she went down to South Plains College in Texas, she didn't know the strings on the fiddle. She left the room when the instructor asked her the class. And but then when she was there, she won 3 Golden Reel Awards.
Right. Incredible, isn't it?
I know.
Yeah.
It's like, and then she went to IBMA and for the International Bluegrass Music Awards.
Right. Well, that just blossomed for both of them.
It was
totally
amazing.
Totally.
So that's where she got a lot of her skills.
Right,
you know,
right.
Oh,
that sounds fantastic. Well, and we'll put this song in the Mountain Girl song.
Okay. That sounds good. And it's my favorite.
Yeah, and I really somehow had thought that it had to do with Gail Jenny, because I thought she's a mountain girl too.
Yeah, she is. Yeah, she was.
Okay.
Yeah.
City burning out my soul. There ain't no street light.
canyon wall. Only glow is the moonlight making the shadows fall.
I'd like to tell you about the places I have been. Traveled around the world and now I've come back home again. Folded maps and photographs in a box of memories. Because of home, they mean more to me. I'm a mountain girl
who has come home from the lights of the city. Burning out my soul. There ain't no street lights on the canyon wall. The only glow is the moonlight making the shadows fall.
It's a lonesome highway among the million rushing cars, but all I need to comfort me is the twinkling of the stars. No passing by, no hiding from the rushing and the rage. Throw the latch, let me out of this cage. I'm a mountain girl
who has come home from the lights of the city. Burning out my soul. There ain't no street lights on the canyon wall. Only glow is the moonlight making the shadows fall.
That was very beautiful. So yeah. I've actually not heard that song before.
It's a lot of imagery,
Oh, boy. Yeah. And coming, you know, living where we do live, we can put ourselves in that mountain bracket, which is pretty cool. So that song was off of Hungry Hill, the album?
Yeah.
That was a group that Jenny was in.
They had all formed together, Mark Tebow, Jenny Lester, I'm going to get it wrong.
That's okay.
The Smithers, and then they were from the White Horse, and it became difficult to keep it going with the logistics of, you know, being so far apart.
Far apart, exactly. Yeah. No, it sounded like, and so the one person we haven't spoke about in the band is yourself. Like, how did you decide you were going to go into the big bass?
The stand-up, I don't know. I think it was necessary. We needed it.
Right.
And usually there was connection somewhere.
Right.
And I can't even remember. I mean, it's a long time ago now, but yeah. I can't even remember where I got it from. But I'm going to mess up some names, so I better not.
That's okay.
We had Doug showed us in the living room. I can remember him showing us, this is G, C, and D. Now you can play every song.
Exactly.
We believed him.
Yeah, that's perfect. Yeah, we actually had a chance back in the day. We had The Peak.
Oh, yeah.
The billiard store and coffee shop. Yeah. And we were trying to have music come to that. And you guys were there.
Okay,
Doug was playing, and there was yourself. Yeah. And I think we had a mandolin player in there, too. I think Scott Atchison.
Scott Atchison and Larry.
I got a picture. Yeah, and Larry, yeah.
High Lonesome.
High Lonesome, exactly, yeah.
Yeah.
That was a pretty
cool
band.
That was very nice. Yeah, yeah, I've actually got that CD. I was just listening to it when I was trying to, you know, find Jenny's CD.
Yeah, exactly. Well, Sonia, now, as we're kind of having other events in your life, the one that stood out for me was the flood.
Do you
remember those days of when the Driftwood Creek turned into Driftwood River?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was pretty incredible. I'd actually, this is strange to say because it's not norm, but I'd had two dreams that one, this brown water was coming by the house, and they were in tandem a few nights apart.
Right.
And then the second dream, I was standing with a man beside me in the dream, and he said, "Would you look, your house is fine."
Right.
So the day of the flood, they had trouble getting me out.
Right.
Now, it was huge. The bridge, I woke up in the morning, the dream wasn't anywhere in my head.
Right.
But I woke up in the morning, and I said, "Richard," because I heard rocks rolling, and I said, "There's a bridge parked by our yard, in our yard here." And so it built up with debris, and all the debris had lifted the bridge anyhow.
Right, originally.
So then the house, the photos, the house is totally surrounded in water, and it even left silt on my porch.
And that is kind of incredible that you would have that dream pre-dream.
Pre-dream.
Yeah.
I know,
yeah.
I know. And so then they, like Herb Green came, and mm-hmm. he was evaluating, and they had decided that whether I wanted to or not, we had to leave. Now, the kids went out in a helicopter.
Right.
And I went out on the blade of a cat.
Oh, right. That was something
else.
Yeah,
but...
So that was the year, like, it wasn't just Driftwood Creek that flooded. There was every creek in the valley was
right.
up.
That's right. And Larry was, he didn't know we had flooded because he was up in Telqua helping sandbag the river there.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, along the Telqua in town there.
And I think why our yard went so fast is he had just rotovated it the day before, so it was all freshly tilled.
Mm.
But three cute little stories that happened out of that was Jenny standing on the bridge by Eileen Shorter's house, and Al Fletcher standing with her.
Right.
And she says, "Mr. Fletcher, have you seen my house go by yet?" And Richard looked out the window and he said, "Mom, we don't have to move to get a change of scenery."
No, that's right. It's starting to move along.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was quite a... That was quite a time.
Yeah,
quite a time.
It was amazing.
We had a farm along the Telqua River, our little ranch, and we were flooding.
Oh.
And we lost quite a bit of land. We couldn't we couldn't save it, but the house was up out of the way.
Thank goodness.
We were okay with that.
Yeah.
And then we went downtown and we were helping the sandbagging of the town of Telqua, because it was critical at the time there.
You must have been working with Larry.
I probably was. Yeah, exactly. So, Sonia, we're kind of reaching the halfway point of our show.
Okay.
And that's where I like to remind everybody that we are on Smithers Community Radio. We call it CICK. And our call numbers are 93.9 on the FM dial. So that is just general information. And we also want to, at this time, have a shout out to our sponsors.
Great.
As we're a completely volunteer group, and we have sponsors that help us get by.
Wow.
So we've got at the bronze sponsor group that I mention are Accounting on Broadway. We've got Ranch House Tattoo, Classic Sanitary, Bugwood Bean, and the BV Concert Association. So just a thanks to them for their support. We really appreciate it. And I just wanted to remind our listeners that I'm Thomas Tom Roper, and our show On the Ropes, we are on every 2 weeks, Monday at 6 p.m. And tonight, we're very fortunate to have our special guest, Sonia Lester, who is presently Smithers Interior News columnist. And welcome back, Sonia.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, Sonia, These kids that you've raised have turned out to be pretty amazing, cool kids. They've all got jobs. They're all contributing. They've all got their own interests and keeping life going. How do you sort of, what would you say that kind of gave you the, I would say what you did in bringing them up to bring up good citizens?
I think it's probably, the kids had their own interests. Mm-hmm. Three different. I mean, Jenny's a musician, and Richie's a physician, and Larry is a engineer, power engineer. Totally different.
Right.
Couldn't be any different, hardly. But they did have their own space. We had the music together.
Right.
They would tear around the yard on their motorcycles or their horses. I never did their homework for them or anything
right.
like that.
Right.
Like, they were accountable to get it done, but nothing I did.
No.
I think about the only thing maybe is giving them the space
mm-hmm.
to be themselves. To be themselves.
Yeah.
And yeah.
No,
yeah.
I think that sounds very, very credible on that, Sonia. One thing I forgot to just mention when we were talking about the flood. When I've seen the odd posting that you have on Facebook, you do mention North Van Search and Rescue.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering if you have a little connection with Search and Rescue from your flood time. Was there a bit of a connection?
Well, actually, not so much then, but... I was with Air Search and Rescue for 25 years.
Okay, that's where your connection is.
Yeah,
right?
And that started with a friend had been killed in a plane crash,
mm-hmm.
and he was in Search and Rescue, and his wife was going, Eileen, and I said, I'll go with you. And I had pearls at my feet.
Right.
Because I stayed for 25 years.
Right, exactly. Yeah. And that was the days of Graham.
It started with Graham.
What was his last name again?
Johnson.
Johnson.
He was also district agriculturalist,
right,
I believe.
Right,
yeah.
Yeah, very
but,
interesting.
But, you know, I need to mention Lynn Van Katzan, because she's been, I think she had to take a break for a little while, but she's been the zone commander for quite a few years.
Right,
and,
right.
And, you know, and it's still a nice organization. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Search and Rescue.
Oh, that sounds like a very good organization.
Yeah.
I don't really like flying, so I never felt that I could join that and get involved in that.
Yeah.
But I've always felt that I want to help in Search and Rescue, you know, and it's not like we have them every month, but
no.
We do have disasters
that happen. Yeah, and
the
wonderful part, for me, was that it was constant training. And
mm-hmm.
I think I needed that kind of tiny challenge in my life.
Right.
Camaraderie with others.
Right.
Every month in the winter, we'd have tabletops. And we'd, you know, practice with the maps. And we'd do, and we always kind of stood up to the plate as things became necessary.
Right.
So you'd be a spotter, and then the next thing you know, you're like, I was area or deputy to help.
Right, right.
And then navigator, and then search coordinator.
Yeah.
So it was a learning, you know, this community, this valley, you don't have to go very many miles, and you've got the most intriguing opportunities.
Yes.
And
like, people that run them, people that are part of them, that are helping you become more.
And the military would come up.
Right.
And we would do evaluations. And now there's emergency services, and I think there's a few people, you know, well, that I know that have joined that.
Right, right.
And it is part of, you know, the value you find in being there.
Yep.
Should a moment happen.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
No, when you make that point about learning, I think that's an important part that all people need to sort of fit into their lives, because we are going to get to this point where we don't have a job.
Yeah.
And then what are we going to do to make our lives sort of meaningful?
Yeah.
And I have met older people that are retired, and they're kind of like, I don't know what to do. I sit home, I watch TV, and there's more out there. There's so many opportunities.
It's unbelievable the amount of different areas, mm-hmm. too. You know, like there's like the seniors, mm-hmm. and I'm going to mention because one of the things that I have found in coming to the Balkley Valley, different from the city, I was busy. We'd get the kids in sports, we'd do whatever, but here there was so much more opportunity where you just sort of get drawn into volunteering.
Mm-hmm.
When I first moved here, my neighbor came up, Marilyn Coles, and invited me to a WI meeting. And just more recently, I wouldn't admit I was a senior until I turned a certain age.
Right.
But seeing the others that do the volunteering and the cooking, and I'm going to mention Donna Smith, because I am kind of forever, I watch other people and then I think, oh, I like that.
Mm-hmm.
I like that.
Yeah, exactly.
And anyhow, she did the cooking and I've helped cook. And then I hide in the kitchen because I'm self-conscious.
Right.
So Donna Smith cooking, and then she goes out with the people. And she's helping them.
Right.
And I'm admiring that.
Right, exactly.
You know? And then I see that she's cooked on the Wednesday morning at the seniors, and I see her at the Legion,
mm-hmm.
cooking and serving and walking amongst.
She's a good woman.
It's amazing.
Yeah, it really is.
Yeah.
It really is. And there's so many various ends of this volunteering. Like I talked to a few people that were involved in Bridge. And that's kind of something that people want to do, play cards.
Yeah.
And it's a learning game.
Yeah.
All these things are kind of helping you understand. You know?
Keep up the.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the same with music. You know, it's providing you with some challenges, mm-hmm, that you can, mm-hmm, keep going on. You know.
Yeah.
Well, Sonia, let's slip in that song that you were talking about with Gail Jenny.
And just as an intro to it, if you don't mind.
No.
I think it was the first time almost that we ever played on the stage at Driftwood Hall. And I will forever remember the feeling I had, because in through the door came the Jennies. And I was absolutely mesmerized that the Jennies were going to be hearing
us. Your production.
Yeah. Which was, to me, nothing.
Because we were
just starting, and I have to commend, you know, people that were hearing us at times. I was awestruck.
Well, there's a big appreciation, I think, for people that are learning, and people like myself who are also in that learning bracket. We appreciate people going onto the stage and putting their best effort forward.
Well, I'm watching you with all the controls and the time clock, and I'm going, oh my goodness, Tom.
Well, you would catch on. Trust me, it's not that complicated. Okay, so this Jane Syberry, is that her name?
I think so.
Okay.
Yeah. I'll tell you how this happened. Is I've been thinking about Gail off and on.
Yeah.
I always do.
Yeah.
Although we never had a chance to become best
really
buddies.
Good friends. Yeah.
But I saw Richard. This is sort of a timely thing. But I saw Richard in the Ukrainian restaurant.
Right.
And I said to him, you know, what's Gail's favorite song? And he
boom.
Came up with that BAM, and he sent it to me.
Yeah.
So, it was.
That is perfect.
Yeah.
Well, let's play it out and see how we make out here.
I'm bound by desire.
That's a pretty beautiful song.
Yeah, very nice. Isn't
Have
it?
You heard it?
So Gale. I listened to it after Richard sent it to me, and I thought, that is so Gale.
Yeah.
Yeah, Bound by the Beauty.
So Jane is a Canadian singer-songwriter out of Toronto, and she seems to stand outside of the traditional boundaries of folk and pop, creating her ethereal, unconventional songs that draw from deep, wellspring of creativity.
Yeah.
That's a pretty heavy write up on her.
Yeah, it is. It's yeah. Very accurate. Yeah.
Very interesting lady. So as we move onward, Sonia, next thing that kind of comes to my mind is your connection with Richie in Kenya. And that's not been going on, like, that just didn't happen. That's been going on for quite a while now.
Yeah, it has. Let me think.
So how did Richie make it to Kenya? Like, when did that start?
If we're talking about the years, it was probably about maybe 1995 or no, 05.
Yeah. 2005.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he was a doctor for internal medicine.
Oh, okay.
And he did research for the HIV/AIDS.
Oh, okay.
There was a group of women in the sex trade in the largest slum in the world that hadn't contracted HIV/AIDS.
Interesting.
So they had, there was about four or five universities around the world that cooperated with the Nairobi.
It was in Nairobi.
Yeah, it was in Nairobi.
Okay.
So I was there twice when he was working there. And I actually got to go to the largest slum in the world.
Right,
and I said to one of the nurses, take me shopping.
Yeah, yeah.
So she put my arm in hers, and the clothes were all in dumpsters, but they had thrift store tags on them still.
Right.
So
right.
It was kind of cool to see how things came from. I'm just going to say the Salvation Army, the Anglican thrift store, and ended up in Nairobi.
Right. Yeah. That's very, very interesting.
Yeah, yeah.
And so that being part of Kenya also gave you the opportunity to see some animals and some scenery.
Oh, yeah,
and it's a very beautiful place.
It's extremely beautiful. And it Kenya, like I even drove all over. I take my granddaughter to school or go to the shopping mall.
Okay.
And then it's January of 06, I think it was, that Richie was looking for something for his mom to do, so he booked me a hike up Mount Kenya. And I had a a guide and a porter.
Right.
And you have to.
You have to, yeah. That's right, yeah.
And so I got to go up to Point Lanana. I spent either 3 or 4 nights in different huts.
Right.
And it just...
pretty exciting.
It was amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the people.
The people are the absolute best.
They're such nice people.
They are. Yeah. When, like, the last time I was in the Garadari in near Nanuki, it's about a 4-hour drive from Nairobi, is where Rich has his property now.
Oh, I see.
So, and it's been my 3rd time there, and the community thinks of Rich kind of as an elder.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're very kind and supportive. And when one of the boys graduated, we got an invitation to the graduation, and Barb Veal and I just sat and enjoyed. And then a young man came over, 14 years old, we're guessing, and he invited us to a circumcision dance, the warrior dance.
Right.
So we got to go, and I got too close into the circle because one of the boys saw me with my camera taking pictures, so he invited me up close. Well, then some of the other warriors didn't like that.
Yeah, right, yeah. No,
so I had to learn my etiquette.
Right, that's right, yeah. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's a place that you can go to forever, Sonia. I mean, you're connected there.
Oh,
you've met a lot of friends, people.
A lot of friends know. You know, the drivers, the cooks.
Yeah. Yeah,
And they're very professional.
And it's kind of neat.
Very proud.
Yeah, it's very neat that you can have that connection that you can go back to.
Yeah,
you know, like sometimes you get in a traveling mode where you're just sort of splashing in and splashing out.
Well, that's what Barb said too. Yeah. This, you know, with we got to be like with the community.
Yeah.
And when Jenny and Larry and Rich came, Jenny heard music down the way.
Right.
So she went and checked it out, and it was a church.
Mm-hmm.
So Jenny.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Being
went,
Jenny.
Yeah, Jenny, yeah. Being Jenny. But she went into the church, and she was part of it, and when she told them that her mom didn't come because she wasn't feeling good, because they knew us all, I guess.
Yeah.
And so they joined in a circle and prayed for her mom. And
It's just a wonderful connection that they have.
Yeah. How much time do you have to talk about this?
About 30 seconds.
Okay. Okay. The dad, the family is the family. He has 3 wives. Barb and I were trying to figure out which child was from which mother.
Right, right.
They're all called the mom, and they all love each other.
And they all work together.
And they're...
as a family.
Extended families.
Yeah. That's pretty cool.
And it is very, remarkable.
Well, Sonia, we have one more song to play, but before we get into that one, it's another one of, oddly enough, I was looking for one Canadian song, and you had 4. It seems your daughter is leading the way on those. But I just wanted to ask you one more little direction. Was along the way you had a stroke, and I can kind of feel your a bit, because I had been through a heart attack, so I've got some kind of connection where we're actually could have died.
Yeah.
And then
possibly,
this point of coming back. Is the question I wanted to ask you is, it's pretty easy when you've had that feeling like, man, I guess it's over. I guess I don't have much longer to live. I might as well just give in.
Oh.
But you're not giving in.
Oh.
I didn't give in.
No.
We're trying to still, make life.
Well, my goal's 100.
Yeah, exactly. And why not?
And have we got time for me to just do a shout out in this community?
Yes.
Okay. I screwed up. I have the column in the paper, Valley Connections, and I screwed up some of the information for Henry Kempner. He turned 100.
Wow.
The most precious thing for me was to have his history and have it right, and I must have sent in the draft. It was a mess.
Well, that happens. It does happen.
It devastated me because not because of my reputation, but because of his.
Yeah.
You know, because of the family history. And these beautiful, good people are good people.
Yes.
And I sent an apology, and she said, we'll figure it out. I mean, they were... And then when I got home, I said, is there anything I can do? And she said, you can visit Dad. He'd love to tell you about his 100th birthday.
Right, exactly. Yeah. What a party he had.
Yeah.
Like it was full. You couldn't get in.
Oh.
There was people out in the parking lot.
Wonderful.
Yeah, it was totally amazing.
Good people are good people.
So just to back up on that a little bit, like how did you get from that position of being, like, I'm sort of relating it to, like, when your husband passed away, you're down, you're depressed, and then you've got to come back. Now, when you have a heart attack, you are, mentally, you're a little bit down. It's like, you know, maybe it's over, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And somehow you've got to get yourself back up. How did you feel that? Is that when you started back at the column?
You know, the back at the column was kind of an accident because I was talking to Tom about something and he said, you can write the column anytime you want. And I was at the muster station by the pool and I didn't even know there was a muster station there.
Right.
And I thought, okay.
Yeah, well, that way you can explain these things in the community that you see and that people need to know about.
Yeah.
I think that's pretty cool.
Yeah, yeah. And I was very lucky too with it, so.
Yes, so we've been very, very fortunate.
Yeah.
Okay, well, let's see if we can get this song in. This is one of my favorite songs, and it's a Jenny Lester special. The River, Mother Nature, and Me.
There's a place in the north where you still see moonshine when the morning sun is high. It's a place Mother Nature takes all her children. None are more willing than I. Sitting on rocks down by dream of. Like never before.
I love that song.
Oh,
and
thank you.
She's got a beautiful voice. It's pretty incredible, and she's still working her career.
Yeah, she is.
And it's pretty fantastic. Well, Sonia, we have squeezed our way to the end, and we haven't touched on hardly any of your life, but we've got little snippets that keep us going, that we can kind of get an idea of what's going on. And I would really like to thank you for coming out and allowing us to meaning our listeners, to get a little more of understanding of your life in the Bulkley Valley.
I appreciate it, and Tom, you're amazing. Seeing him on the controls.
Yeah. Well, the thing
and all the questions.
The thing that always amazes me, Sonia, is how did we get so fortunate with the luck of the draw, being born in Canada and then actually making it to the Bulkley Valley.
Yeah.
I mean, it's kind of phenomenal, really.
I'm with you on that one.
Yeah. So I'd also like to have a big thank out to my listeners, and hope that they can tune in 2 weeks from now on Monday, February 10th. We're going to be interviewing Medrick Poirier. I don't know if you remember him. He's a local carpenter and was actually fortunate to win the lotto back a few years.
Mm-hmm.
And so we've got a few interesting stories
from
him.
Oh, that'll be fun.
Yeah. So we'll just set up now and see if we can close out with our outro. Here we go.
You have been listening to On the Ropes, Smithers Community Radio, CICK 93.9 on your FM dial. I'm your host, Thomas Tom Roper, and we will see you on the flip side.